Choices Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm Vanessa Lowry and your host for today's show. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they've written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. Our regular show host, Tim Morrison, is off doing some other things today, some networking and that kind of thing, and I'm grateful that he's letting me fill his hosting seat again today. Andy Lowe is my co-host. In addition to co-hosting Right Here, Right Now, he's part of the Business Radio X family, and he hosts several of his own shows. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Vanessa, and how are you this morning?
I'm great. It's always good to get to see you. I only see you every few weeks.
I know, but I enjoy it when you come. I keep threatening Dr. Tim that we're going to take over his show. He doesn't necessarily believe us, but it's going to happen one day.
We're scheming behind
his back.
We're
scheming behind his back.
While he's
exactly.
not here.
I hope he's listening in.
I'm sure he is. If not listening live, I'm sure he's going to listen to it later.
That's right. So. That's right. We love you, Dr. Tim.
We do. And we're very grateful for you. So today we're talking about the momentum of having multiple books published. I recently read several articles about where comments were made about the best way to promote your current book is to write and publish another book, which I think is just fascinating. So to find out more about this, I've invited John Gordon to join us today. He's the author of 7 books since 2007, and John's done just that. He's gotten the momentum of multiple books. John's best-selling books and talks have inspired readers and audiences around the world. He's the author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller, The Energy Bus, and also The No Complaining Rule, Training Camp, The Shark and the Goldfish, Soup, The Seed, and his latest book is The Positive Dog. Welcome, John. It's so good to have you with us today. I'm excited to talk to you about your books and all the cool things that you're doing.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So, John, you and I met several years ago when you were a keynote speaker at a conference that I attended. And at that time, you were branding yourself as the Energy Addict and were known as the Energy Coach. And shortly after that, your book, The Energy Bus, was released. So how did this personal brand that you had created around teaching people to raise their energy help you promote your book, The Energy Bus?
Well, you know, that's a funny thing, Vanessa, because shortly after I wrote The Energy Bus, I was wanting to move away from the Energy Addict and move away from the Energy Coach. Because I realized that I wanted to speak more to businesses. I wanted to talk more about leadership. I wanted to talk more about building a winning team. And so my first two books had nothing to do with the Energy Bus, but they had energy in the titles. And one of the titles was Energy Addict. And so I came out as the Energy Addict, you know, helping people get addicted to positive energy and so forth. And I guess that was a good start, but when I started getting serious about culture, when I started getting serious about leadership and wanted to really transform organizations, I felt like Energy Addict wasn't really a serious kind of, hey, the Energy Addict's coming today. Like, who's this guy? And so The Energy Bus was actually a book I wrote with the hopes of really still bringing the energy concept of positive energy to that is essential to building winning teams, that is essential for leadership. But I really wanted it to be more about, you know, how do we build a great organization? How do we build a great team? And so from there, the Energy Bus really became my brand more than anything else.
So the Energy Bus, it obviously resonates with a lot of people. It was published in 2007 and has achieved international bestseller status. And then just a few weeks ago, in May of 2012, it was again in the top 10 of the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. What caused this renewed interest in the Energy Bus?
Yeah, well, it was number 7 on the Wall Street Journal list and number 6 on the USA Today bestseller list. So 5 years after the book came out. But it wasn't a renewed interest. What's happened over the years is just what you're talking about, momentum. The book has just gained this viral momentum where it's being passed from person to person, coach to coach, business to business, word of mouth. And it's just been so exciting to see. I'm just so thankful because when it first came out, I remember praying for it to be a bestseller, and it came out, it was a bestseller in Korea. And I learned you have to be specific with your prayers. But in the U.S., Barnes & Noble, Borders, all these bookstores wouldn't even carry the book. And so it was really frustrating. So as you know, Vanessa, because I think you were aware of this tour I went on a 28-city tour to really get the message out about this book. I paid for the tour myself. the publisher wouldn't even fund it again because I was just a new author. But I really believed in the message. I was passionate about sharing it. I really believed that I had a book that can make a difference. And so I went out there, and for every event, there was, you know, 10 people, 20 people, 30 people. You know, but for every 100 people we invited on the bus, 10 people, you know, got on. That's it. And so what happened was over time, those 10 people that got on the bus started sharing with 10 others, and they started sharing with others. And over time, it spread because it's the kind of book that people are really resonating with. It's really having an impact on NFL teams, colleges. I've seen it transform school districts. And George, the main character, is really an example that optimism is a competitive advantage, that being positive not only makes you better, it makes everyone around you better. And so I think people have really resonated with this. And now it just continues to grow and grow. I just heard from UPS in the Northwest. They handed the book out to 700 of their managers in the Northwest, the Seattle region. And those 700 managers then rolled it out to their 11,000 employees. And they literally can see an increase in performance, and all their performance metrics have gone up since rolling out the book. So it's so exciting that we actually have some numbers that, show this.
Well, and so any author...
It's been a gradual. It's a gradual word of mouth growing. And then we continue to see it build even now from, a year ago. So it's very exciting.
Well, and any author would love to sell 700 of their books at a time, and especially 11,000 of their books at a time. So when a company's going to sell that many, do they contact you about getting a bulk order and getting a little bit of a discount or a customized version or anything like that?
We get a lot of emails, you know, that say, hey, how can we buy books from you? But we don't sell books directly. I made the conscious decision early on that I didn't want to sell books. I wanted to go through the retail channels. I wanted to go through all of those outlets. And that's been a smart decision, I believe, on my part, because I had so many books going through Barnes & Noble and other bookstores that they actually started to feature the book in their stores, which then increased exposure. So from that standpoint, I really believe it was a good decision. Yeah, I could have made maybe more money, but you know, I wasn't interested in money. I wanted to get the books out there and, have an impact.
Well, I know that you've done a lot of extra tools and downloads that people can come to your website, not only for the Energy Bus, but for some of your other books. How do you feel like those posters and those tools that you've made available for people help spread the word about your books?
That's a great question. You know, I never get really asked about it. And yet, if I was speaking to new authors, people who wanted to write, or even people who were saying, hey, how did you grow, you know, your business? How did you go from, you know, no one even knowing about your books to now selling 4,000 copies a week of your books? Or, you know, a lot of times it's 5,000 copies of, all your books every single week. And I believe those posters and the free giveaways that we have done with it have been really a key thing. And we didn't do it on purpose to, like, try to sell more books. We were just trying to give people tools to help them, not realizing that people would put these posters up and then other people would see it and it would create a conversation piece. So way back then, even before the book Made to Stick, which I love that book, by the way, Made to Stick, I realized we were doing all the things that Made to Stick talks about to create a sticky concept. And those posters, the action plans, the downloads, the discussion guides, all the free stuff that we've given away has, been instrumental. And the other key thing I think we've done unintentional, we never held on tight, you know, to the intellectual property. By that I mean we let people use the Energy Bus sort of logo, you know, as they were promoting the book. People have within their company took the action plan in the back of the book and they started sharing the tips with their employees. We didn't say, hey, we are the only ones that could come into your company and do it. We sort of gave people some free tools to actually do it themselves. Now, you can't take my stuff and go you know, do workshops for other companies and get paid for it. I've actually had a few people do that thinking they could, and you really can't do that. That's not allowed.
That's not
but
cool.
No, it's not. If people don't get that. They don't understand the intellectual property. They're like, you can't go make money off of it. But if you want to go share with your employees and your team at work and do that, we give people a lot of tools to be able to do that. Again, unintentionally, but looking back, it was one of the best decisions that we could ever make because we weren't trying to just hold on so tight. And so people felt free to make it their own. People felt free to, say, okay, how can I use this for my team? And it's been exciting. So now I just came up with these videos. I just produced these videos the other day where I share the 10 rules for the Energy Bus and take them through a workshop. And then there's a workbook that's going to come with it. And there's discussions that we do on screen graphically. And we just came up with that because what we realized, there were so many people who wanted help. They wanted resources. So now we've created this video for people to be able to do that. So anyone could take it with their team, pop the video in, and then facilitate it with the workbook. And we're going to make that available as well. Again, giving people ownership to do it themselves.
Well, and I know in addition to the business market, you have had a whole program for kids and schools, and you're coming out with a children's version of the Energy Bus. I know I've seen the cover of it. I'm not sure when the book's supposed to come out.
It will be out in August. And I honestly have resisted for years to write a children's book because I didn't think I could. And then everyone kept on saying, you know, when are you going to come out with one? We really need one. The schools were asking one. And then one day my publisher said, hey, we want you to write a children's book. Do one for the Energy Bus. And I was like, okay. And so I just sat down. I had some quiet time one week and just wrote it. And then they found an amazing illustrator. And he's from Texas. His name's Corey Scott. And once I saw his illustrations, I was blown away, and it was magical. And so it's going to be just a really powerful book on helping kids overcome negativity, helping kids overcome challenges, and also how to deal with bullies in school. So I think it's going to be a great message at the right time right now. So I'm really excited about the children's book as well.
Well, that's awesome. And that bullying has been such a in-the-news topic over the last few months that I think anything that you can give kids and everybody involved in school system tools of how to overcome that is really valuable and has repercussions beyond what you can expect.
Yeah, we're going to have a free discussion guide and activities guide that we're going to give the teachers. So we're going to give them all these different tools and lessons and activities that they can do with the kids to help teach the lesson.
Now, John, does that cover the social media aspect of bullying as well? I mean, you know, in the old days when I grew up, I mean, bullying was done face-to-face, but now the internet has really given ground to people to be bullies in ways that they couldn't be bullies in a physical sense, but they're very good at doing it in a you know, technology sense.
Yeah, great point. It doesn't, just because this book was geared towards elementary school kids, and I know kids are going to start younger and younger, but
as we said, they've all got iPads now.
I know. But we didn't address that issue, but you're right. I think that is a very powerful issue to be addressed, and maybe we'll write one for tweens, you know, for middle school kids, where we really address that even more. But yeah, I think it's important to address all those issues. You know, it's funny. I get bullied sometimes when people will make some comments and stuff. So, you know, but the great thing about Facebook, though, is I can just defriend them immediately.
You've got the power.
And I do. Like, I want to get mad. I want to respond. And I just go, I don't have to. And I just unfriend them. And I'm like, okay, goodbye. And I thought, if only we could do that sometimes with our relatives.
That's right. Well, and John, I know that you just came out with your latest book, The Positive Dog. In May, so just last month. So how have the momentum of your other books affected the sales of this newest book that came out?
I think they all feed, you know, no pun intended, on each other, and they all, you know, they all build each other. The Energy Bus, I'll be honest with you, you know, outsells all the other books combined. It's just amazing how it's like its own little phenomenon. I'm just so thankful, like, you know, again, I don't take credit. I don't see. I just hear an awe going, wow, I just cannot believe this book is getting out there as much as it is. You know, The Seed is my wife's favorite book. I wish The Seed would gain that kind of momentum, and I think it will. And I know Training Camp has had a lot of people who tell me all the time, that's my favorite book. You know, I like The Energy Bus. I love Training Camp. And yeah, Training Camp is the one that, I mean, Energy Bus is the one that continues to do unbelievable. But The Positive Dog, I think, was helped by all the other books because when it first came out, you know, it definitely launched the strongest we've ever had, and it's doing really well. And I didn't expect it to do as good as it is doing. You know, again, it's a little story about, you know, a negative dog named Matt. They call him Mutt, and a big dog named Bubba teaches him how to be positive, takes him under his wing, and then it's the science and the strategies and the benefits of being positive. I thought people would think, oh, it was silly, and it's dogs, even though I wanted to write it, I thought it was cute. I still thought people would be silly, but even leaders are really saying, hey, I get this. You know, this is important. We got to feed ourselves. We got to feed others with positivity. And so it's been really cool how people are taking to it. And I think that the message of positivity builds on the Energy Bus. But one of the things we did to help, you know, create the momentum as the show is about and what you're talking about is in the back of the book, the back flap, we used to have my bio there. And one day I looked at it, I said, why do we have my long bio there? Like, who really cares? You know, it's not about me. I said, let's put the other books on the back flap. So when people buy the book, they can then know the other books I've written, because we had no cross-marking of the other books. And it was funny that I came with the idea. My publisher, who should know this about books, was like, hey, great idea. And that's what we did. And I think since that time, more and more people are now, they read one book and then they read the others. And I think that's what happens when you see a trilogy and you see an author who's written John Grisham and other, and no way am I in their category, their league. But when you see that they've written other books and you like an author, you start reading all their books. And that's what's happening to me now, I notice. People read The Energy Bus, now they're reading the other books. Or they start with Training Camp, and then they read the other books. Or I heard of a pastor the other day, a very famous pastor, has been giving all the books out. A U.S. congressman was teaching a Sunday school class, and my friend was in the class, and he told everyone to read The Seed. And so it spreads from word of mouth, and then the person says, oh, what about his other books? And they, oh, I didn't even know he had those other books. and so it starts to grow that way, where people start to read all your other books.
Well, and I know that your books all have a business message, but they all tell a story. They're all a fictional story, kind of a business parable. So how did you decide to approach your message from that direction?
I don't know. I just felt inspired and honestly felt called to write in that way, where I didn't want it to just be about business. A lot of people say they take these books and they apply it to their personal lives as well, because in the story, it's not just some guy or woman who's at work. There are people at work, but then I write about their families. I write about challenges they're facing at home. I write about their emotions. And I think people can connect with them as characters. So even though they're business fables, most business fables in the past, when I would read them, they were like stick figures, two-dimensional. And I don't know, I just, when I wrote, I wanted them to be people you cared about. And so I wrote the business fable with business lessons, but people care about the characters, and then they become engaged in the characters. I meet people all the time on the road where I'm speaking, like, oh, did so-and-so get married at the end of the book? Did, you know, what's George doing now? And did you ever meet a real Joy? And so people really connect with the characters, and I think that's what's different about the books.
And do you have any characters that cross over into multiple books?
Oh, yeah. Well, Joy makes an appearance in Soup, even though she's the main character and the bus driver in The Energy Bus. And then the cool thing that I did that, again, was an accident, all the characters in the books are connected, except for the shark and the goldfish. The goldfish is not anybody's goldfish. But in all the books, not all the characters are connected, but there's always a character or two that is connected. So Coach Ken in Training Camp, the coach who takes Martin Jones under his wing and teaches him the winning habits to be his best, Coach Ken is the father of the female CEO in Soup, and Nancy. So Nancy's dad is Coach Ken. And then Nancy's son, Coach Ken's grandson, makes an appearance, his name is Solomon, in The Seed. And so all the characters are connected. Joyce in the No Complaining Rule is Joy, the Energy Bus's sister. So everyone connects.
Oh, that's cool. And no wonder people ask you then what's going to happen with the characters, because they've got this whole life going on of their own.
Yeah. And then, George makes an appearance, the main character of The Energy Bus, who gets his life turned around, makes an appearance in The Seed on an airplane. He's now he's now in his mid-50s. He's an older gentleman now. And, you know, compared to what he was in the Energy Bus, you imagine he was in his probably 30s. And now he's giving advice to Josh, the main character in The Seed, really life-changing advice. And so people really enjoyed that he made an appearance, you know, in The Seed.
So you've written and published 7 books since 2007. You also run a successful business that involves speaking and consulting and training around the country. And I know that you travel all the time. So how do you create space in your schedule to write?
That's a great question. And what I've realized is it's hard to do it when you're on the road so much. You know, the last couple of years, it's been challenging. But every December, as a speaker, it really slows down. And so I write pretty much from December 1st to the first week in January, where nothing's happening. And that's when I've written the last 3 or 4 books. Every year I write in that month. And I finish a book usually in 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
So I'm able to write during that time. I already have the idea. I have the thoughts, I have sort of the outline in my head, but then I sit down and I write it during that time. And that's the quiet time that I find to really write before it gets all crazy again. So it's been, it's been tough because that's the time my family has off and we want to just relax. But I'll get up every morning before everyone else does and I'll write. And then I'll try to write at night and I'll get up the next morning and I write at night right before I go to bed. I find when I write a little bit at night, just a little bit, the ideas are really fresh in my head. So I wake up with all new ideas and then write in the morning. And I felt that's been a good recipe for me to get writing done.
So as you're traveling around the country and speaking and interacting with people that are reading your books, do you find that some of the comments that they make and some of the questions that they ask you find their way into the next book when you get ready to write it in December?
Yes, very, very often. So there are times where I've found the speaking drives writing, where I get ideas while I'm speaking, ideas on the road, preparing for talks, and those kind of thoughts make its way into my writing. I write a weekly positive tip every week where I write it every week. I don't have anyone else that writes it. Everything I write is for me. My books, everything I do is for me. I feel it has to come from me. It has to be authentic. It has to be real. So when I write newsletters, those sometimes make it into books because those get good ideas. Those were really where my, best ideas come from. And then from there, those newsletter ideas make its way into talks. Talks make its way into books. Book ideas make its way into my talks. So the writing and the speaking create a cycle of ideas and thoughts and then principles.
Well, and I love what you mentioned earlier about the characters in your book. You portray them both at work and at home, and it sounds like that's the way you live your life too, is that everything affects everything, and so you just incorporate it all.
Yes. I often look at other people who go on these writing retreats and they write and I'm like, oh, wow, I can't do that. I've had to write in the chaos. I've had to write in the midst of two kids. They're in middle school now, 8th grade, 6th grade. My daughter's going to 9th grade now, been in high school, 7th grade. So as they were growing up, I was writing. But I think that's what made the books more real, because I was writing from my own standpoint of the real life I was facing. They're not fantasy. They are real life. And I think that's why people can resonate with them.
Well, and I know many authors think that if they're published through a traditional publisher, like you have been, that the publisher is going to do all the promotion that's necessary for the book. And I know that you've had a traditional publisher, and you mentioned earlier you've done some promotion yourself, but I'm curious how much promotion you do yourself versus what your publisher does.
Oh, I'd say it's 90% myself, 10% publisher. I mean, I have a great publisher, and I love him. John Wiley is awesome. My editors are amazing. I really feel great about them. I just know that publishers' roles, their role is really not as marketers, even though you would think they should be. They're not really great at doing it because they have so many books that they have to put out. They have so many books that they're dealing with that they can only devote so much resources to your books. So it's really up to you as the author to promote those books. It's up to you to get the message out there. So I would say 90% of it has been done by me. Again, they've been very helpful, but most of it has been done by me. Like when the book comes out, they'll send it out to all these people. They will do a massive mail into the media. They'll make a few calls. But in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, they're done with it. Like,
yeah.
Okay, on to the next book. And you then have to take off from there.
So can you describe some of the things that you do to promote your books?
Sure. I mean, it's no secret. It's not rocket science. It's just the weekly positive tip. It's speaking really helps the books get out there. Now we're using social media a lot. I mean, I just do a lot of tweets and Facebook kind of, stuff. One of the things we just started doing recently was giving a few chapters away of the book. I send out, some books to different influencers that I consider influencers out there, leaders, pastors, coaches in the NFL that I know, send books to people like that. I think the greatest thing that we do is really the newsletter. And then also, friends and other colleagues who also are writers who will then, promote your book when it comes out to their list and to their subscribers is always a nice thing to do.
So some cross promoting to a similar audience.
It's never like, hey, you do this for me and I'll do this for you. Like, but it's usually like, hey, can you help promote? But sure. If you have a relationship and then someone asks me, hey, I have a new book coming out. Can you help me? Sure. You know, again, if you have a relationship, if you just, you know, usually there's some kind of relationship that makes that happen. Not
right.
just some guy calling up, hey, will you promote my book?
So you were mentioning influencers. Can you just talk a little bit more about how you describe an influencer?
I think your influencer is people just who have a large audience, people who have a radio show like you, people who have a blog, they're influencers, people who are other authors who have a large following, pastors who have large congregations, coaches who lead a team. So we're seeing the influencers change them. I mean, Twitter's becoming a huge, huge, influencer, hub. But for me, you know, I don't have a huge amount of followers on Twitter. It's weird. I have like 100,000 subscribers to my newsletter, but only like 9,000 Twitter followers. So it's interesting, you know, as you switch gears, you got to start getting a new following. And, the way I've done it is just by sharing thoughts that I believe, information that I believe helps, and the intent of making a difference. And I have found that I never had explosive growth. I never had an automatic bestseller. I've never had instant success. For me, it's always been a gradual process of just doing the work. And I think that's the message of the seed. So many people want success now. Everyone wants to chase success. But what I tell people is just decide to make a difference. And if you decide to make a difference and you plant yourself every day, you'll grow into the leader you're born to be, and you'll attract people who want to be part of that growth. And so for me, that's what it's been. It's just every day just trying to make a difference. And then, you know, Vanessa, you've seen the growth that has happened over time, and that's just a testament to just doing the work. Just do the work. Live it. Breathe it. If it's truly a part of who you are, it will lead to great things. If you're trying to be successful and you don't have success, you're going to give up. And that's just the way it works.
Well, and I just read a blog post yesterday that I thought was very interesting. It was by Chris, and I can't say his last name, but he wrote The $100 Startup. And he's And so he was talking about that you have people that are famous, that there's lots and lots of people that are interested a little bit in what they do. And then you have people that have worked really hard to build a small army. And this small army of people cares a lot about what they do. And that's really what you need for success, is you just need a small army of people that really, really care about what you do. And I can see that that's what you've done over the years. You've built this small army of people that resonate with these ideas that you put out. And they care a lot about what you're doing and what you're coming out with next.
That's a great point. I'd have to agree with that 100%, because that's what I was thinking the other day. Is it better to have a million Twitter followers who really aren't loyal and just sign up because you're famous? Or is it better to have people who truly embrace the work that you do, love it, share it, and then, you know, join you in trying to change the world? And I'd rather have the smaller group of people who want to help you change the world.
That's awesome. And John, we're going to give away a copy of your book, the new book, The Positive Dog, to the first person that sends us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. So can you just describe a little bit about The Positive Dog and what they can expect from that book?
Sure. They can expect ways to just be more positive, how to shift your perspective. You know, I've learned we don't live our lives based on reality. We live our lives based on our perception of reality. And it's all about your perspective. I tell the story about my grandmother. She was really scared of flying. And she would often say, I know when they say your time is up, your time is up, but I don't want to be in a plane when someone else's time is up. And so that's how she lived her life. Every time we flew, she looked at everyone on the plane as someone who was going to cause her death. And so that was her perspective. But other people have a perspective of flying. It's exciting. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I have a lot of work to do in this world. I'm going to be fine. And so it's all about your perspective. When it rains, do you focus on the rain, or do you focus on the fact that, you know, you're grumbling, that you're getting wet and you're mad, or that are you happy that, you know, you needed the rain and that it's going to create a great garden, provide your plants with the water it needs, and blah, blah, blah. So it's all about your perspective. So the positive dog is, how do we feed ourselves, that positive dog inside of us, instead of the negative dog, in order to be our best? How do we feed others with encouragement and kindness and positive energy and love, and feeding others is like a boomerang. The more we feed others with positivity, it comes back to us, and then we're happier. So when we're positive, we're happier. When we feed others, we're also happier. So it's just a great way to live life, and it's a simple story about Bubba and Matt and how they try to transform the shelter where they live and their relationship and what happens to them at the end.
Well, in every moment, we have the opportunity to choose what perspective we're going to take on the circumstance that's with us right then. So,
right. I mean, when you face a challenge, is it a challenge or is it an opportunity?
Right.
And how you look at it defines how you'll take action with it. Is it a loss? Or as in my family, loss stands for learning opportunity, stay strong. So is it a loss or is it something that leads to growth and helps you get better? Do you focus on what you have to do or do you focus on what you get to do? Two words changes everything. Do you focus on gratitude? Do you focus on feeling blessed? I know you do a lot of work with that, Vanessa.
Yes.
Do you focus on feeling blessed or do you allow yourself to be stressed? And again, it's shifting your perspective by what you're dealing with. And people say, yeah, John, but that's just Pollyanna. That's not reality. No, reality is ultimately what you make it. And so you can look at a funeral, and some people go to a funeral and they mourn, which is understandable. Other people celebrate life. Everyone's sad, but when you're there, you're celebrating the life or you're mourning the death. And again, I'm not saying either is wrong, but it is your perspective in that moment will define how you feel.
Exactly. That's exactly true.
My wife is Irish. And so, you know, we've been to some Irish funerals that were more wild than any wedding I've ever been to. So, you know, again, it's your perspective determines how you think and feel. And optimists change the world. Pessimists don't change anything.
Yeah, I agree. So our first listener that sends us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com and say, I want John's book, and send us your name and address, and we'll let you know if you're the one that won, but we'll get a copy of The Positive Dog to you. So so thank you, John, for donating that for our listeners. I know you also have, we talked earlier about some of the free tools that you have on your site, and you've got a free tool for The Positive Dog that's called A Positive Pledge. So can you tell our listeners what that is?
Yeah, it's a pledge to just be more positive. And you know, I'm very honest with people and tell them I'm not naturally a positive person. People think I am because of the books that I write, but I'm really not naturally positive. I have to work really hard at it. So one day I was having a tough week about a few months ago, and my daughter came up to me and she said, Dad, I think you need to read your own book. And I knew she was right, and I was being really negative. And so I sat down at my desk, and sure enough, I just started to write down a pledge to be more positive for myself. And then writing this pledge, started sharing with others. And now we have a website, thepositivepledge.com, where people could take the pledge, sign it, share with others. And doing so really had a big impact on me and others.
I think that's awesome. And I love that positive pledge. And I know people can share it on Facebook, which I've done, and get the word out to other people that can bring that positive energy out into the world. So I know.
Definitely.
So Ken Blanchard, who's the author of The 1 Minute Manager, wrote the foreword for the Energy Bus. And I've heard you talk in the past about what a mentor that Ken has been to you. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of mentoring, both in finding a mentor and then becoming a mentor yourself?
Everyone needs a mentor, and everyone needs, you know, a mentee, because we learn most through teaching. We also need people who speak into our lives, who encourage us, and who've been there. So when I started writing and speaking, you know, I looked at people who are out there and thought, well, who do I want to emulate? Now, of course, I want to be myself. I want to be unique. But who's doing it right? Who's living the right way, doing the right way? And Ken Blanchard, to me, was someone who was doing it the right way, the way he lived his life, the person he is, the fables he's written. So Ken is, you know, made a tremendous impact on my life. So, you know, I think Ken is one of the great human beings on this planet. And so I think having a mentor who can encourage you and give you, you know, good advice is awesome. And I sought Ken out. I mean, he obviously didn't seek me out, but I sought him out and asked him for an endorsement and gave me an endorsement. And then I was at an event in Las Vegas he was at. We were both speaking, and we talked, and we actually went to go see Danny Gantz together, the Las Vegas entertainer. And so we brought our wives, and we got a chance to spend time there. And then when we were in San Diego, got a chance to see his family. So it really helped.
And don't you all share an alumni association together as well?
I missed you on that one.
Oh, I said, don't you all share an alumni association together? Didn't you go to the same?
Yeah, going to Cornell University was definitely, I guess, a connecting factor. And that's where I had first known of Ken when he was a professor at Cornell. He was a legend at Cornell. And so going to Cornell was, you know, you always heard about Ken Blanchard.
Well, and I love that idea of, you know, connecting with people even through the weak ties that you have and trying to see where you've got some commonality when you're reaching out to somebody.
Definitely, definitely. And I think the fact that, you know, I was a Cornell alumni obviously made him more interested in the work that I do.
So, John, I know that you're very involved in professional sports teams. You do a lot of work with them from a team building standpoint and a motivational standpoint. How did you start getting involved with those professional teams?
Well, they read the Energy Bus. So that's how it started. They read the Energy Bus. And then from there, they would call me. And then I would go speak to the team. And then coaches started sharing with other coaches. And then other coaches just started calling. And so that's how it really happened. It was really something that just sort of happened. I didn't really pursue it.
So a nice little niche to have.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I was a Division I lacrosse player at Cornell University. So I played lacrosse and, you know, loved sports. And so it's a lot of fun to be able to go speak to competitive athletes. And I know Notre Dame women's lacrosse, they read the Energy Bus this year. Notre Dame women's softball team, they all read it. The Rutgers women's basketball team read Training Camp. I know that the 76ers basketball team, the pro team, they read Training Camp. The Boston Celtics used Energy Bus this year. So it's fun to see all the different teams utilize the books for their players.
That's awesome. So how has being a published author and a best-selling published author of multiple books, how has that impacted your business?
Oh, I think it's just been, it's just been something that creates momentum. It's something that just feeds off each other and grows the overall work of you. But I can't say that I did it intentionally. I think it was something that just came to me because there were words and books I wanted to write. There were thoughts I wanted to share. I don't think you can do it intentionally and say, oh, I'm going to write another book so it will help me promote my first book. I think if you have thoughts to share and you have a book in mind and then you have another book in mind, you should write them and it will help the other book just by growing you and growing the work that you do and growing your following. I think a lot of people, though, make the mistake, Vanessa, they try to write all their ideas into one book. And I tell people all the time, just write one book. Have one core message, one simple core, and then write the next book. Stop trying to write two books in one or three books in one. Write one book at a time, then write the next book. And I think that helps people because I think your first book, you have all these ideas swirling around, and you try to do too much into one, if that makes sense.
I think that's great advice. So do you have a notebook where you keep some ideas for when you get ready to write your next book?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have I know now the next three books I'm going to write. And after that, I don't really know what I'm going to write. But I know the next three. And then maybe I'll get a few more ideas for the next ones. And so I know what I'm going to write next. But I do have a notebook where I write certain ideas down, certain thoughts, but it really comes as I'm getting closer to writing and I take these walks in the morning and I, you know, practice gratitude, I pray, and from that I come back and I write down ideas that I then incorporate into that day's writing. So it's like a daily walk and a daily write.
That's awesome. So, John, I love your positive message, and I so appreciate you sharing it with us today. So how can our listeners find out more about you and buy your books and book you to speak at their organization?
They can go to johngordon.com, johngordon.com. So that's my website. Tons of free resources on there, as we talked about, and they can also sign up for my weekly positive tip. And then, they can just reach out to me from there. I'm also on Twitter at johngordon11. At John Gordon 11, and then it's good to go.
And on Facebook, you've also got, of course, I'm sure that's on your johngordon.com site where they can link to all those different social media sites as well.
Exactly. Exactly. And the chaos is starting in my house right now. Everyone's starting to get moving, so I probably should go.
Well, we're just about winding up. Andy, did you have any last question for John before we head off?
Yeah, John, I got one question for you. Just thinking about the coaching world, because I have a background there too. Do you ever find that it's difficult to get people to accept the fact that the message is relatively simple? It's like people want complex answers to what is really a simple problem.
I think there are a lot of people who think it has to be complicated, but our core message is simple is powerful. And so it's a big part of what we do. And that's what I hear most from people, is you make it so simple. So the people who really love my books and embrace my books are people who get that simple is powerful. And that's what gets those books so viral. That's what makes people share them so easily. That's what makes people read them. I hear from people all the time who haven't read books in years, and they say they've read my books. And so the fact that it's getting people to read is what it's all about. So that's what I love.
Yeah, I think that's a great takeaway. Simple is power.
So, John, thank you so much, and the clock is on us. So we welcome our listeners' comments and suggestions about content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. And thank you, Andy, for co-hosting and producing our show today.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you, John Gordon, for being my guest. And John, can you just share your contact information once more?
Sure, johngordon.com, johngordon.com. And I really appreciate being on your show. Thanks so much. You guys are great.
Thank you. So Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, how about sending them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to download some of our previous shows? Listen to Right Here, Right Now live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at rightherightnow.businessradiox.com or download the MP3 version of all of the interviews on the Right Here, Right Now website. I'm your guest host, Vanessa Lowry. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right here, right now.